core argument is going to be, you say that the government has looked into this. Well, look what the government is doing in general. Norway is one of the few countries in Europe where the emissions of CO2 is increasing. Most countries have been able to put this to decrease the emissions. Our emissions are increasing. We are not close to fulfilling our obligations according to the Paris Agreement. We have to do something. We cannot solely trust the government.
Welcome to Planet Rules, where we explore the law, politics, and our climate emergency. My name is Mark Taylor, and I'm a researcher based here in Oslo, Norway. In advance of this week's appeals court hearing in Norway's 112 constitutional challenge case, I sat down with Professor Jørn Øydehagen Sunde. He's a professor of public law, a legal historian, and an expert on Norway's Supreme Court, and he has closely followed the 112 case. I asked Professor Sunde about the background to the case and where he thinks it's headed.
What was, in your view, the kind of key question that the court had to answer in the first instance?
The first question is simply if the paragraph 112 in the Norwegian Constitution can actually be applied to review an executive decision. So that's the first question. I would say it's a fairly simple question, but it was still debated in the court.
Paragraph 112 of the Constitution says
that the citizens of Norway has a right of protection of environment and climate, really. That's the core. The second question is then, okay, so you can use paragraph 112 for review, but what is the threshold going to be? Now, that's a major question. Is there a low threshold? Then the NGOs has a fair chance to win the case to declare the executive decision as invalid. If the threshold is very high, then the NGOs really don't stand a chance at all. So that's the big question.
Was there any element of the case that dealt with the substance of the issues? You know, the fact that by putting these licenses out there for competition, that the government was having an impact on climate, that there would be increased emissions or exports of emissions of fossil fuels by Norway, which was, of course, the heart of the case as far as the NGOs were concerned.
Yes. Well, the thing is, to decide where you're going to put that threshold, the NGOs has to use a lot of arguments for that these petroleum licenses, well, they're licenses to test drill. So quite automatically, you then get also a license to actually exploit the oil and gas you find. But still, they're just for test drilling. But they spent a lot of time arguing that exploiting the oil and gas that you find in the Barents Sea, possibly, that's going to damage the environment. And their main argument is, we're already in the world in general found enough oil and gas that it is a problem if we're going to stay below 2 degrees increase in the temperature worldwide. The general attorney didn't spend any time on such arguments, and that's quite natural because his main argument is that the government has looked into this. This is politics. It's not a question for the court to decide. And if the government had come up with a decision that has taken this into consideration, that decision has to be respected. So the argument in court is very, very different because the two parties are revealing two very different narratives. The main narrative of the general attorney is, we've looked into this and it's okay, trust us as the government. While the NGO says, you can't possibly have done that because you've come to a conclusion that shows that you haven't looked into it properly, and then the court has to look into it.
You've written that you've sort of used a football analogy, suggesting that both sides managed to score points here. Elaborate that a little bit. What were the gains and losses on each side here?
Yeah, I think the most important issue for the NGOs was to have it confirmed that paragraph 112 in the Norwegian Constitution can be used to review legislation and executive decision.
And so really the court was being asked whether or not that part of the Constitution could be used to review a decision of the government, in this case to put out licenses for further oil exploration.
Yes, because the general attorney's argument was that this is a political aim that is put in the Constitution, but it's purely political and not legal. So this, and quite honestly, if you read the preparatory works that led up to the change in the Constitution in 2014 with the new phrasing of this paragraph protecting environment and climate. That's a very hard argument to make. But it was important to have this confirmed, that you can use this paragraph for review, because there's other cases coming up. There's cases concerning mining, for instance, and so forth. So this was important for the NGOs for future use, really. When it comes to what the government scored is, of course, the government won in the sense that the threshold for reviewing was made so high. And this the court could do due to two lines of argument, I would claim. One is that for a review to take place, the contribution of the oil and gas activity in the Barents Sea had to be give a substantial contribution to the emissions that it's causing climate change. And they concluded that actually very little of that oil and gas would be used in Norway. And oil and gas that you find in the Barents Sea, but you use in other countries, that's not a question that can be that can influence how a Norwegian decision of review. It's a very, very strange argument, I would claim. If you look at, you know, rocket science and rockets, the general principle is this: where you launch a rocket is where you also take responsibility for any damage that rocket made. Course. So if it falls down in a different country, that's not that country's problem. It's you who launched it. You are the one who has an interest in launching the rocket. Hence, you have to pay for the damage. And you find this as a general principle. If you just look at product liability, if you produce a product, you almost have a strict liability for any damage that product causes. I don't think it should be any different for oil and gas.
Does the Paris Agreement complicate that argument at all?
It does, in the sense that, well, in general, all agreements, what we do is that you introduce an accounting system. So the emissions you have in your country is your responsibility. But that's an accounting system which you've made to make sure that you don't count emissions twice. That's not a legal system. But of course, that line of thinking, what the general attorney is, he brought it into a legal setting where it doesn't really belong. But I can't blame the judges, since it's used in these different treaties that you know concerning climate. What I think the judge was thinking, but not writing in his decision, is this: if I make Norway responsible for all emissions of CO2 based on, you know, from Norwegian oil and gas, what will happen next? Will we get in a situation where people would say, well, the Norwegian courts have stated Norway has a responsibility for the oil and gas it exports. Now, that oil and gas has contributed, for instance, to the sea level rising. I'm living on an island which is disappearing, and we're an entire population that needs somewhere to go. Norway has a big oil fund. Can we sue that to get money? To simply survive. And I think that was in the back of the head of the judge. Yeah.
Maybe it was a bit unfair to put this all on one yes. person. Can you explain a little bit? What are the options here in Norway for...
Yeah, in Norway, there is an option according to the Civil Procedure Act from 2005, that if a case is very difficult and demanding, instead of having one judge deciding the case, which is the overall normal situation, head of the court, the president of the court, can decide that it's going to be decided by three justices instead. I think this was a perfect case for such a decision. That decision should have been made. It was much too much responsibility to put on one judge. Should have been three justices deciding that case.
Will that be the case now when the case goes to appeal?
It will, because that's the normal situation in an appeal court, is three justices deciding the case. And I think because you have three justices discussing among each other before writing the decision, I think you will get a better argued case. I don't know if the you know, the result is going to be different, but it's going to be certainly better argued.
What can we expect from this phase of the case? Do you expect a lot of debate in Norway around it, or is it something that is kind of really isolated from the political debates?
Well, first of all, it is isolated from the political debate, and it should be. As soon as a case goes from the political sphere to the legal sphere, politicians should not argue about the substance of the case pending for the courts. And I think it was actually a problem that some members of the parliament during the when the case was up for the first instance court actually went into the media and says, if the court rules against the government, we have to change our system of appointing judges and it has to become politicized. Now, that is scaring, you know, the daylight out of the justices. And I think that was a threat that was inappropriate, thinking of the principle of judicial independence. I think it was much inappropriate. So I hope that this is not going to trigger off a debate among politicians as the case is pending for the court. When that said, I think when you had the case pending for the first instance, there was a lot of debate in the media. So the newspapers, TV, radio, you know, they had a lot of reports on the case. The commentators would comment on the case. I think that was good. I don't know if it's going to be as much this time. And that's simply because it's less sensational now. But it doesn't matter because what we see is that student organizations, grandparents' organizations, I mean, there's a lot of organizations out there which is holding debates. They're asking people to give speeches about it. So I think that debate is living out there in society anyway, anyhow. So you don't need that same kind of a media attention. And maybe it's that good. Maybe it's good that you get this kind of a grassroots debate instead of a media debate this time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot has happened since the last decision in terms of mobilization. You've had Greta Thunberg, you've had the climate strikes, you've had all of the marches, etc., worldwide, but also here in Norway.
And you actually had a very surprising turn in the local election September this year. All political parties had decided on forehand that climate and environment wouldn't be an issue in the local elections. And there was a grassroots push. So in the end, a local election, which is not really about climate, but the local election had climate as one of the most important issues that were debated. I think that shows how much of an awareness and interest there is out there. And I don't know if the political community had been observing this change as closely as they should.
Litigation like this isn't exactly normal in Norway, is it? I mean, no. It's not like the United States where a lot of people tend to sue a lot of other people. Can you tell me a little bit about how this case fits into the way things are done here in Norway?
Yeah, that's a very important question. The general attorney has kind of tried to scare the court with claiming that, you know, if the NGOs win this case, we will have an American system in Norway. That's not quite fair because, first of all, in the US, the courts have had the right to review legislation, executive orders, etc., since the very early 19th century. That has also been the case in Norway. Norway was the only country in Europe where the courts exercised such a right and has done so for 200 years. On the other hand, this has not taken the same turn as in the US. The US turn is much due to the fact that the political system is kind of blocked. You know, there is impossible for Congress and Senate to agree on major political changes for the American society. That's not the case in Norway. We don't even have a two-chamber system. So making political changes is quite easy. And if you look at the American Constitution, there's not been major changes for quite a long time, while the Norwegian Constitution has been changed more than 320 times the last 200 years. And we're talking about a Constitution that you can only change if the change is agreed upon by two different parliaments and with 3/4 majority each time. It's quite difficult to change the constitution, but we have a consensus-based political system which makes changes and radical political changes possible. Hence, the courts really deal with these kind of issues. If we go 50 years back in time, they would deal with a similar kind of politicized issue once every second year. Now they do it once every fifth month. So, of course, there's been an increase, but we're talking also about a society where much more of law in general is politicized. We have had a legalization of Norwegian society. There's much more rights out there. And if you compare how much legislation giving people rights is out there compared to the kind of cases that is pending for the Supreme Court, there hasn't been much of a change. And I think this case is most appropriate. I think it's clearly a case where the Constitution opens up for review. More important, the committee that prepared for the reform of the Norwegian Constitution in 2014 explicitly said that the old paragraph 110b, which was also a protection of environment and climate, had caused too little litigation. And they changed deliberately the wording of the paragraph. They gave it also a new number, 112, to open up for more litigation. They thought that this was an important issue in the future, and even the head of the commission that prepared for these changes explicitly said many times in public that it was the executive decisions that were the problem, not the legislation. So quite honestly, this commission prepared for a change that we now see taking place, and this was what they envisioned.
So a panel of three judges at the appeals level will hear both sides again. Will there be any kind of difference in the sorts of arguments made? And secondly, what happens once they've ruled?
The general attorney is basically going to follow the same line of argument that he did in the first instance. This is taken care of by the government. Yeah. I hear your arguments, but so did the government, and they didn't find them sufficiently important to decide otherwise. The NGOs are going to have even more argument, put more arguments on the table. A core argument is going to be, you say that the government has looked into this. Well, look what the government is doing in general. Norway is one of the few countries in Europe where the emissions of CO2 is increasing. Most countries have been able to put this to decrease the emissions. Our emissions are increasing. We are not close to fulfilling our obligations according to the Paris Agreement. We have to do something. We cannot solely trust the government. And they're going to prove this by empirical facts, by witnesses, etc., etc. So they're going to be very hard on these substantial arguments, seeing that climate is changing, etc., etc. So it's a battle.
And trying to show that, trying to undermine the argument that government action is sufficient, right?
Yes. And meaning we have to lower the threshold for reviewing. I think the NGOs will be wise to also have a more of a comparative view this time. The Uganda case in the Netherlands is very important, I think, in a Norwegian context. There's a lot of cases out there talking about systems which is more close to us in the sense that a court decision is going to have political consequences. I think using these cases, the Dutch case, the Australian case, etc., showing that courts are taking action in the world today, it's going to be important to encourage the Norwegian Appeal Court to be brave. I would claim it's brave. The general attorney is going to be, say, political.
From the appeals court to the Supreme Court, is it likely that the appeals court will defer certain issues to the Supreme Court, or does that happen?
No. They have to decide the case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have different strategies. So you can decide a case, meaning that you decide a case, but you still leave it so open that you're forced to appeal it to the Supreme Court. And I think that's what's going to happen. The appeal court knows whatever happens, this is going to end up in the Supreme Court. Hence, they're going to decide a case to make it as appropriate to deal with for the Supreme Court as possible. And then the Supreme Court is going to decide this case in a plenary session. That's very important. So the Norwegian Supreme Court only have 20 justices. So that's more than in the US or England, but it's actually less than the most civil law countries on the continent in Europe. And not all 20 judges, because that's an even number, but, you know, 19 at least of the justices are going to meet in a plenary session to decide this case. And that's because we're talking about constitutional review. In such cases, the court always decides in a plenary session.
How long does it normally take to go from the appeals to the Supreme Court, and how long would a Supreme Court process take?
Well, usually the Supreme Court should be able to deal with this case within 6 months, at least. But, you know, it has taken a long time for the first, from the first instance to the second instance courts. And that's because the general attorney, I would claim, is deliberately delaying the case, saying he's way too busy to deal with the case. And that's because his strategy has been the longer time that passes, it's the more costly for the NGOs, and also the enthusiasm is going to wear out. It has proved to be otherwise. And that's a very interesting development in this case, because the awareness of climate changes is just increasing in Norwegian society as it is globally. Even if the Supreme Court rules, you know, in favor of the government, there's going to be a political debate afterwards. And this is maybe the most interesting part. Whoever wins the case, there's going to be a political debate. And we had a similar, not quite similar, but the closest you get to similar in this context, case in Norway in 1982 called the Alta case. So Alta is a valley in the very north of Norway where the Sami had been reindeering for centuries. And it was decided by the government that you should build a dam, basically flooding all the herding fields for the Sami. And NGOs and the Sami NGOs and also environmental protection NGOs sued the state, the government. A plenary session ruled in favor of the government. But afterwards, the constitution was changed. First, it was changed and it gave rights to the Sami. So a right for to protection for the Sami culture, business, etc., etc. And by, you also got a protection for the environment. That was also influenced by other movements like the Rio Convention, very important. But the Alta case was also very influential for changing the constitution. And hence, you can lose a case, but you can win the political debate. And whatever happens with this climate case in the court system, the attention it has triggered off, I think, is going to lead to a victory within the political decision.
Next up in Planet Rules, we'll be looking at the ways that law, both in the EU and in North America, is adapting to the challenges posed by the climate emergency. We'll talk to some of the people behind proposals for changes to the purpose of the corporation, examine the regulatory issues posed by the trend towards circular economies, and ask why is Apple suing small town, high street, electronics repair shops. Planet Rules is produced by Laws of Rule Podcasts with editing and graphic assistance from Nepotism Productions. For updates on this and other cases, be sure to follow at Laws of Rule on Twitter. And there you can also drop me a line with suggestions for future podcasts on law, politics, and the politics of the rule of law. Until next time, thanks for listening.